All right, we're back here at Chicago Jazz Revealed. I'm Mike Jeffers. Now, we just heard a track from my guest sitting here in studio, Erin McDougall, from her upcoming release called Outside the Soiree. And, of course, that tune was called The Midnight Sun, but it was there's a lot of different rhythms happening. So why don't we find out about that and about everything else Erin has coming up. How are you, Erin? I'm glad you made it all the way out here.
I'm wonderful. Thanks for having me out here.
Yeah, it is a pleasure to have you in studio. And I know you and I could probably talk for, what, 3-4 hours?
As we do on the phone sometimes.
Yes, without even thinking about it. But, you know, tell me a little bit, because I know that this CD, this recording has been in the works, and it's hopefully going to come out this year. I know that you're trying to figure out the best way to put it out and the best options, but... Boy, there's a lot of heavy hitters on here, and well, why don't you fill me in now? Who's on the recording?
Well, there's Rob Block, who played piano and classical guitar and electric guitar. He also played. Did he play Rhodes? I can't even remember at the moment. I'm sorry, but Mark Sherman is on vibes. Rodney Green is on drums. Our good friend Cliff Schmidt, who is here for a few years working with me back in my Allerton days, if you recall, is on upright acoustic bass. And on saxophone is Rob's brother, Dan Block. He also played a little bit of flute on a track that you'll be hearing coming up. We did a cha-cha version of Brother Can You Spare a Dime, which was very fun. We also had percussionist and Grammy-nominated Chimbo Wilson. Mm-hmm. And we had Dave Liebman and Tom Harrell. It was an all-star roster, I guess you could say. Dave Bennett is the one that recorded us. That would be Tony Bennett's son. And he was charming to work with. And we did this right outside of New York when Bennett Studios was still happening in New Jersey. And this was already 3 years ago, which I can't believe.
Well, and it takes that long, too, because, I mean, just to put it together and put a project like this together with all the different people that you just mentioned, I mean, that first of all, the planning of the entire project had to be, couldn't take just like, hey, let's make up a couple of phone calls here. I mean, it probably took a little bit.
I was shocked. The planning, I did extensive arrangements with Rob Block. For the most part, several of them were my own arrangements, including Midnight Sun. Mm-hmm. But the easy part was getting these phenomenal musicians to agree to do this project, which shocked me.
Right, you would think it would be a little difficult.
I contacted Dave Liebman's manager at the time, whose name is Dave Love. And it turns out Dave Love is from Cleveland, Ohio. I'm originally from Columbus. But long story short, I just sent some tracks from my older CD, Meeting Place, and said I'd really like to have Liebman on this recording. We tried to work with him a Meeting Place 6-7 years ago, or at the time, whatever it was, 4 years ago. And it didn't work out. But please contact me if you or he has any interest. And I thought maybe it would be a month before I heard back from him in like 20 minutes. He listened to the tracks,
really?
Called Dave Liebman, said, she sounds really good. You know, he called me, said, you do realize, you know, he doesn't really work with singers. And,
right, yeah.
And I said, I'm aware of that. But and he said, you know, he's really, you know, intrigued. So that happened. He was the first person on the album to be confirmed.
Well,
it was
once
amazing.
You confirmed Dave Liebman. I mean, you know what I mean? I mean,
right?
You confirmed Dave Liebman. You might as well just go right to it.
Right?
Get Dave to say yes, and then everything else is cool.
Right. And Tom Harrell had said to me in correspondence and months prior to that, you know, I'd be interested in working with you sometime. And so I said, you know, Mr. Liebman's interested. And Rodney Green asked to be on the album. So that was exciting.
I love Rodney Green's playing too. You know,
I love it.
I used to see him play when he was with Mulgrew Miller.
Yeah. Rest in peace.
Yeah, the great Mulgrew Miller, and just swinging, totally swinging. Seems like a really nice guy too.
Very fun. He befriended me rather quickly. In months prior to going into the studio, I met him with Mulgrew Miller, as a matter of fact, in Chicago. They were playing at the Jazz Showcase, so this was spring or summer of 2010, and he said, I've always wanted to work with Tom Harrell, and that's amazing that you've got Tom Harrell on this project, and you know, you're a different kind of singer, I think was how he put it. I'm paraphrasing, I think, but he said, you're really, you know, impressing me, and so give me a call. And he was calling a lot, and we forged a nice friendship.
Mm-hmm.
And the amalgamation of players on this project could be really, you know, overwhelming if you let yourself think about it going into it, not having met some of them in person, like Dave Liebman.
Sure, right.
And going into, you know, Dave Bennett's studio.
Did you talk to him on the phone? Do you run down things on the phone and everything?
I just sent emails. Lieb is very, you know, at that point, you know, he's become a wonderful friend to me, he and his wife both. But at that point, it was just pretty, you know, business. One sentence,
sure, yeah.
Responses from him, and it'll be fine. I'll just look at the charts when I get there, honey. And this, you know, when we did Midnight Sun, I just remember at one point we did a run-through of it, and Lee was was going through his solo, and he stopped and said, and we laughed so hard, he stopped and said, "Where's the merciful 4/4 section again?" I'm doing these arrangements for these, you know, guys, because I thought, you know, the last thing they're going to want to do is do an album with a singer that's like, let's do Midnight Sun like a ballad.
Right.
You know, the way it was written, you know, God forbid.
Right.
But, and I actually, you know me for a long time, you mm-hmm. know, my forte is really taking standards, even standards that have been done to death, so to speak, and turning them into different arrangements and something progressive. So we had a wonderful time with it, but it was a long process. The recording session itself was just a couple days. I wanted it all to be,
yeah.
You know, we were all together. I wasn't going to do any over tracking, anything like that. The vibe was really wonderful in terms of people being, you know, enthusiastic to work with me, even though I was the relative no name, and working with Cliff again because he had moved back to New York in that time, so it was great. He's a very close friend of mine, and Rob just played so beautifully. You know, the Latin numbers that we did a Brazilian tune, we did a choro, a chorinho, which is a version of it's a certain type of forgive me, those of you who are rolling your eyes at me right now. It's a certain type of Brazilian tune that it actually translates as a little cry.
Okay.
And Rob taught me about that. And so we took this song from a musical called Nine, which I've never even seen. This song is called Unusual Way. I don't have it with me today. So I guess you're just going to have to get the album.
Right, thanks for teasing us.
But this song is called Unusual Way.
I don't have the tune, and the album's not out yet, but it's really good.
But this song was, we did it with this chorinho style, and Rob said that it ended up being his favorite tune on the album, mm-hmm. and Chembo said, you know, she really knows how to sing these rhythms. And I said, no. Rob Block taught me all this. I had no idea what this was beforehand. But it was a learning experience, and I feel very proud of it. And I just, I'm not quite sure when we're going to get that CD out.
Well, you know, since we're talking about the album, and before we move on to talk about a lot of other things, why don't we hear another track from the album, which is coming out at some point. Now, tell me a little bit about the title before we go to it, Outside the Soiree.
Oh, Outside the Soiree is the title track of the album. I wrote that song. I wrote that song.
Outside the Soiree.
I know, it doesn't sound like anything that I would say, right?
Well,
where would she come up with that, right? This is tongue-in-cheek, ladies and gentlemen, for those of you who haven't met me. Outside the Soiree was a poem I actually wrote in October of 2007. I put music to it in early 2010, and it's I actually don't have it with me either. We have two other tracks, but I just burned you some other songs. But
but why did you call it Outside the Soiree?
The reason why I called the album Outside the Soiree and the songs that I chose for this album, because I'm obsessed with thematic ideas and albums, whether they're vocal albums or instrumental. I really admire artists who make their albums thematically, mm-hmm. you know, consistent. They don't just put a bunch of songs that they like to sing and then call it some random title. That's always kind of annoyed me somehow. It's offset my design mentality. But
well, it's not the way you think.
You think
complete theme.
I know. Not to be opinionated or anything. But so Outside the Soiree, I just I turned this this poem into a song, and found that there were a lot of things happening in the course between 2007 and 2010 that became cyclical in my life. And ironically, from 2010 to 2013, you know, we recorded the album in 2010. Mm-hmm. Those cycles repeated in a completely different. The songs and on the album now represent my life, you know, still, but differently.
Differently, yeah.
So I kind of. This album is a very personal album. I know all albums are personal for musicians, but these songs that I chose all kind of deal with either being outside of something, either it's outside of your own feelings or outside the soiree, you know, being like locked mm-hmm. out of a party, you know, not being the cool musician on the scene, because I certainly remember those days, like yesterday. But so... the next song that we'll be listening to in line with that theme is Brother, Can You Spare a Dime? And a lot of people haven't heard the verse to this song, so we wanted to include that in this recording. And we took it from, like other songs of the album, also in line with the theme. We tried to take an outside perspective on standards.
Yeah.
And we did this song with a cha-cha feel. Because we
thought
that, you know, so many people do this song as a ballad or as a blues, and when you really think about it, and I think it's pretty potent right now, and if you think about what's happening in the world and the immigration, you know, depending on how political you want to get with jazz and the theme mm-hmm. of a song, but I remember Rob asking me, are you sure you want to do that? And I said, why would we not do it like a cha-cha? Think about all of the different ethnicities that made America this quote-unquote melting pot. Why would we just continue to do this song the same way everyone else has done it, like this, you know, downtrodden blues, when really bringing a different side of life into this tune, into the lyrics, and into the meaning is showing just the, I think, the resilience, you know, of, yeah. of what was happening and saying, I did this, I did this, I did this. Now, brother, can you spare a dime? Can you mm-hmm. help me? I'm in a place right now where America's turning their back on me. And Rob's like, God, every song has like this long psychology. That's what this is, my friends.
Well, your next album, you can just piecemeal a bunch of tunes together and do it completely opposite. Nothing right. has any meaning. Yeah. That's it.
Random.
That's the name of the tune, Random. The right. next album, Random. All right, well, let's take a listen to Brother, Can You Spare a Dime here from Aaron's upcoming release, Outside the Soiree, here on Chicago Jazz Revealed, 90.9 FM, WDCB, and chicagojazz.com. All right, we're back here at Chicago Jazz Revealed. I'm Mike Jeffers, publisher of Chicago Jazz Magazine, and we are sitting here with Aaron McDougall. Now, we just heard a tune from your upcoming release, and, of course, that was called Brother, Can I Spare a Dime? And or Brother, Can You Spare a Dime? Well, which is it?
It's Brother, Can You Spare a Dime? But I really
sure.
like I like your turn of phrase.
Brother, can I spare a dime?
Let me just tell you.
No. The right. answer is no. I own a jazz magazine. The answer is no.
No.
You know, talking about that new recording and all of the interesting people on there and everything. Now, you've played a little bit since then, right, with either Dave Liebman mm-hmm. or mm-hmm. Tom Harrell.
Tom Harrell. Right? Actually, we were trying to get Tom Harrell in next month for a gig, but due to his scheduling, and he's always recording, you
yeah.
know, and it was just too hard on him to be back and forth.
Back and forth,
so
yeah.
hopefully we will be arranging that.
Now you
sooner.
Have maybe it's the same gig, probably the same gig mm-hmm. that we're going to talk about here. February 14th at the Green Mill. Just happens to be Valentine's Day. So Valentine's Day with Aaron McDougall and her quartet over at, or quintet, depending on how many people show up.
depending on who's not mad at me that day.
Well, it's flexible. It's in flux right now. but anyways, so the show's at 9 o'clock, right? Regular Friday night mm-hmm. at the Green Mill. And for those of you that have never been to the Green Mill, if you're looking for a place, I love going to the Green Mill. It is a throwback into the 1920s. Dave Gemmelow, the owner, who we, by the way, we had as a feature interview on Chicago Jazz Magazine last year, told some great stories about how he actually developed the concept and really brought it back to where it was back in the early 1920s. And this is a club that if you haven't been to a jazz club in Chicago, this would be the first one I would go to, because it's just, it's that hip feel. Of course, a lot of famous people have come out of there. Regular gigs with Kurt Elling came out of there, and Patricia Barber, and the Fat Babies are there on a regular basis. Alan Gressick's Swing Shift Orchestra. And Aaron's performed there several times, and she's, of course, coming up February 14th. But the Green Mill is at 4802 North Broadway in Chicago. More information is available at chicagojazz.com. We've got the whole listing and all that stuff for all the shows that are coming up in Chicago. But, sorry I got sidetracked, but I love the club, and I love the whole vibe of the club.
As do I, yes.
So, anything special for Valentine's Day? Are you doing all love songs randomly?
Oh, God, yeah. Just what I need for my reputation.
Ballads. To be,
yeah. I'll come in with my stilettos and red lipstick and sing one depressing ballad after another. I can see Dave already, like, his blood pressure going through the roof, right? We did kind of comically quip it as Valentine's Day Rendezvous with Aaron McDougall's quintet in the ads.
That's cool. That's cool.
I think I'll be doing tunes, you know, because I can't help but be a smart aleck, but I think I'll be doing tunes that are, you know, a lot about breakups or I'm fine without you, you know, just to make people laugh. And, you know, we'll do some love tunes, but I like to keep things, I like the pace of a set to be expansive in terms of rhythmically speaking. I don't tend to do all ballads or all upbeats or, you know, all Brazilian tempos. I like to just vary it enough so enough people can be interested, even maybe not jazz aficionados, but novices who want to come in and see the place and check out this jazz thing.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Well, I think that's going to be cool. And, of course, everybody can visit your website, flappergirlsings.com. Now, why the flapper girl? I know I've known you for a long time, and I think you've told me, but why don't we tell everybody, why the Flapper Girl? Because you've got also another series that we're going to talk about soon, which is sponsored by the company that you have, Flapper Girl Productions, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So now, why the Flapper Girl?
Interestingly enough, or maybe not that interesting at all, depending on, you know, how bored you are listening to the show, to me ramble.
Nobody's bored listening to Chicago Jazz Revealed.
I know. Well, I'm thinking that the most succinct way of putting it is I always had this penchant for the 20s, and from everything from vintage fashion flair to the music. I loved my grandfather very much. He was a very big influence in me getting started in jazz, just because he loved jazz and I loved to make him happy.
Yeah.
That's the easiest way of putting it. But he knew all these tunes from the 20s, 30s, and 40s. So I, when he developed Alzheimer's, I was happy to sing them for him, you know, and it kind of rebooted his memory and his mood. And somewhere around that time, in 1999, I thought, well, I had a very short pixie haircut, if you remember those days, and I was singing more cabaret. And someone came into a vet's and said, some regular, and said, "You're like a little flapper on that piano with your fringe dress." And I was like, I love the flappers. that's all you need, like a little bit of inspiration with through suggestion. So my first album that nobody even knows about or remembers came out in 2000. It was called Blue Prelude. Mm-hmm. And we released it on Flapper Girl Productions. And from that point forward,
I remember it. We reviewed it in the magazine.
Oh, was it? Did you do Blue?
I think so, yeah.
I remember you did Auburn Collection, but I didn't.
I think we did that one too.
Yeah.
Like one of the first ones, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So it was a long time ago. I listen to it now and I just laugh because it was a bunch of ballads, you know, blue, you know, and I just kind of like, you know, roll my eyes and laugh. But that's kind of the thing that I was doing at the time in these, you know, more cabaret style clubs.
Well, now, since we're talking about that FGP, Flapper Girl Productions, now you've been doing an interesting series at a recording studio, and you came up with this idea to do, it's almost like I almost call it like a private gig, but it's not. It's open to the public, but it's in a recording studio. Now, you were doing it at Strobe for a couple months. Now, I know that you're going to be doing it at several different recording studios, kind of move it around the city a little bit. But basically, at least with the Strobe ones. You were doing, there was like seating for about 50 people or so, 30 to 50 people. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of an intimate, you know, performance, which actually it reminds me of like some of the, like the house parties that people are doing, you know, where they have like all the neighbors come over and there's like 20 or 30 people in it. They create their own jazz club. This was right. like you were creating your own jazz club in a recording studio, which, of course, you can record then.
Right.
And it's beneficial for the musicians. It's beneficial for the audience and everything else. And it was kind of a nice hang. Then afterwards, everybody hung out until all wee hours of the morning
right.
and talked and all that stuff. Now, how did you, I mean, did you do some of those house parties? I think you have, right? You've
of
done
course,
some of those
right.
house parties, but you wanted to move it into more of a recording setting, or what was the concept?
Well, I do a lot of events. I live downtown in a place that I, you know, absolutely can't afford. no pretenses here, folks. Totally transparency. and I do events. Corporate people who have been coming hear me sing for years. I now have shifted a lot of events. Instead of being hired to sing up... hi, Paula Bella. He just walked by. Sorry, had to do it. but I've been hired to spontaneity, folks. That I was hired to sing a lot in places, you know, corporate restaurants and their back room private party area. And I thought, this is silly that people are spending whatever, a few grand to be at this, you know, kind of generic setting when I'm a pretty good hostess. I throw some pretty, you know, nice soirees.
There you go. Now we know where the name came from.
Right.
That's what I was waiting for.
So that became a thing, and I met up with the owner of Strobe. His name is Jamie, and he said, I used to do these Strobe sessions on Wednesdays, and, you know, you'd be a really great person to bring your knack for, you know, the jazz sensibility and kind of maybe upping it a few notches mm-hmm. with a little more sophistication. And they went really beautifully well. We basically, you know, tying in the whole theme of the Flapper Girl here, we basically make it a speakeasy.
Yeah.
Because, you know, a recording studio, as you know, does not have a liquor license and does not have a license to put on concerts. But what they do have a license, what they are legally allowed to do is record people.
Sure.
And when people come in to listen to these intimate performances, not concerts,
right.
performances, they become part of that recording. So they're paying the studio just like an artist would to be recorded
mm-hmm.
and to be part of that. And I always like to get everyone's name. That's why I ask people to RSVP, because then they become part of these liner notes when these live albums, if and when they ever do
right. come out.
Release.
Sure.
And I just think it's a nice way of documenting a truly Chicago experience. It gives notoriety to these studios. It lets other artists who come in for the jazz jam after the concert know, hey, this is a really nice studio. They've got great equipment. I really like this engineer. This is a nice vibe. I think that it bolsters business for the Chicago venue. It bolsters, mm-hmm. It gives a, you know, a haven for people who are just hungry to
yeah.
see live jazz, that maybe don't want to be in a bar and drink. Maybe they don't, you know, maybe they can't afford to go to an expensive restaurant, you know, the pops or champagnes when they
yeah.
had jazz.
Well, you know, the other thing is too, that I like about it, it's intimate, and it's a point. It's one of those things where non-musicians usually don't get to experience the music in that way.
Right.
You know?
It's letting them in on, like, yeah. a secret.
Right. It's like
this
they're
is,
in on
is,
the rehearsal or something.
They're
inside.
In on, I mean, I literally, I remember we did, the first session we did, I did with Carlos Henriquez, which is Wynton Marsalis's bass player.
Mm-hmm.
He came in for it. It was phenomenal. But I said, guys, you're in a recording studio. So, and we just met, you know, I've known Carlos for a couple years, but we're just doing these tunes, you know,
right
now. So if I want to do them again, guess what? Welcome to recording studio experience. But they actually dug it. You know, they're
yeah.
like, oh, they just did it three different ways. Which
yeah.
take are they going to use?
And, well, and that's cool, too, for an audience, because, I mean, how many people go to see a jazz group and they love the music, but they don't really know the ins and outs like a musician would know the music. You know
mm-hmm,
what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So if you're there and you actually do it, two different times,
mm-hmm.
they're going to hear the little nuances
mm-hmm.
that they would never hear because, I mean, how often do you start and stop a tune in a club?
Right.
Never, hopefully, right. Fingers crossed.
Well, no.
But, you know, I mean, so they can actually hear that. And then, you know, hopefully, you know, down the road, some of this stuff will be released, too. I mean, it's a great archival thing.
I think so, too. I think for the studio, for the artist, and for anyone that's a part of it, because I listen to these recordings where I've heard people say, I was there at Mr. Kelly's when Anita O'Day did that. And you think, their name should be in the liner notes now. Wouldn't it be fabulous if someone rewrote, you know, Neil Tesser, are you listening? If someone rewrote the the liner notes, Grammy winner, Neil Tesser. and included these.
Name dropping
right. I just wanted to, you know, give him a little shout out. But, you know, and gave, you know, a nod to the people that supported the music.
Yeah.
And I feel that we should do that as artists and as a community.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe, you know, the scene might get a little healthier.
Yeah. Well, now you're taking it on the road, and I know you're mm-hmm. still lining things up. Are you going to have all the information at your website, flappergirlsings.com?
I will, hopefully in the next couple of weeks. It's going to take a while. Doing it at a different studio every month is going to be significantly more work in some ways. But in another way, it keeps things, it's like a moving speakeasy,
right.
You know, kind of like, where is it going to be this week? You know, RSVP and I'll give you the location.
Yeah.
So I'm excited about the additions that we're mm-hmm. making to the plan.
I think that's really cool, too, because, I mean, you know, sometimes you might, you know, where Strobe was, some people might not be able to get there. But if you're over on the north side or if you're on the south side or if
right.
you're in the center of the city, you might get different people. It's a different vibe, too. It just creates different energy, I think.
Right. And yeah, and every, you know, it can be, I mean, I have been doing it twice a month. Maybe we'll only do it once a month. I'm going to see if I can pull in some sponsors that can help guarantee the musicians some money because we're literally working for the door. So
sure.
people are coming in to pay to be part of this recording, mind you.
Mm-hmm.
The musicians are being, you know, sharing in that money that's coming in. And you know, sometimes it's not that much, but I've really noticed that it's created such camaraderie among the artists that want to be a part of each session that don't normally get to work with each other, that they're wanting to do it. So it's an exciting process.
Yeah. Well, so they can get more information at flappergirlsings.com.
I promise, soon.
But, you know, I'm interested in, you know, we're talking about different energy and different things. Now, obviously, I don't know if anybody can tell. She's got a lot of energy here on the radio. And you have that same energy when you're singing on stage. You know, you were talking about at the beginning of the show how you like to do tunes differently and everything. We were talking on the phone how I know that firsthand because the first time I played with you, well, maybe I played with you before that, but the first time I actually, like, you were on a gig with me and it was like a last-minute thing, and you didn't know anybody else in the band but the drummer, which, mm-hmm. of course, is like the last person you need to know. You probably need to know the piano player a little bit more than a drummer.
I loved knowing you. I felt completely comfortable, though. I mean, I didn't sweat it. I was like, this is going
to
be
great.
But
you came out, you wanted to do some tune, like completely, hey, what was it?
It was a sweltering hot day in 2010.
Yeah. Oh, man, and the air conditioning,
broke.
Too.
I've had that. You know, that just happened to me in New York last summer in the same month. I'm like, what is it? I'm plagued. But we were at the Felix Hotel, and it was boiling hot, and the air conditioning went out. And I said, let's do Summertime. And I'll let you tell them what we did.
Yeah, well, we started playing, and I'm like, okay. And it's like you wanted to do it rubato, and then you wanted to get
and
all this
free.
Time
I said,
stuff
let's do it free jazz starting off.
Yeah,
just drums
and this is
and
like,
voice.
Just like people eating dinner and stuff. I'm like, how far out are we going here? You know. So
well, every person in the room
stopped what they were doing
and listened. It went silent, and you looked at me, and you're like, I don't think that's ever happened.
No. Well, the first thing I did, I looked at you and went, I hope you're right about
what the
hell? I hope you're right about this. But it worked out, and so I guess my question to you is, what are some of your influences?
Well,
who are some of your influences?
Who are some of my influences? Musically speaking, for some reason, people are presumptuous when they're talking to, particularly a female singer, if I might say, that we are influenced first and foremost by other singers or female singers. And, of course, you listen to singers, and no matter what an instrumentalist says, They listen to singers. If they don't know a tune, what do? They look up a Sinatra tune to find out what the lyrics, what the actual melody is. I've noticed that over the years. But the truth of the matter is, where I find my style emerging is less and less from vocalists and more towards instrumentalists.
Yeah.
And those instrumentalists span from Chet Baker. I've always referenced Chet Baker, who, yes, he did sing, and he sang the way he played. So mm-hmm. that's what struck me most interestingly. I really enjoyed his phrasing. It took me a while. In the beginning, I couldn't understand all the fuss when I was really young, but he was a phenomenal bebop player. He was a phenomenal master of phrasing.
Yeah.
And he somehow became more famous for his balladry, for his, you know, his interpretations of ballad standards. But he's definitely an influence. Thelonious Monk is an influence just because he seemed so percussive. You know, he was very percussive in his playing. He's not where everyone was being melodic in those days.
Mm-hmm.
He seemed much more, you know, staccato in the way he attacked the keys. I like noticing something different about not just the song, but the way it's approached and the way the instrumentalists work with each other. So there's just a plethora of people that I could talk about. I love.
Well, you brought somebody in, right?
I did, and I brought in a vocalist. I was not going to, but I did bring in a vocalist. I'm not sure if I necessarily sound or sing like her. I mean, I've always, everyone that knows me knows that I love Anita O'Day and Carmen McRae. They're huge influences on me. But the last 3 years, I'd say, I've been very much digging Larez Alexandria, who's from Chicago.
Yeah.
So I did bring in a track of hers called Baltimore Oriole.
Well, let's take a listen to that, and then we'll come back with a few more minutes with Aaron McDougall here on Chicago Jazz Revealed, 90.9 FM, WDCB, and chicagojazz.com. All right, we're back here at Chicago Jazz Revealed. I'm Mike Jeffers, and we have a few more minutes with Aaron McDougall talking about all the different things that are happening with her in the city and the upcoming release. Now, we just heard an a tune by one of your
influences,
and she's from Chicago.
Mm-hmm. Larez Alexandria. I think she died in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
But as we were talking about the Green Mill earlier, I should mention Dave Gemmelow told me that he actually had her perform either the first year he opened the Green Mill in 87, or it was when he had the hi-hat. Were you around in Chicago? Did you know about the hi-hat?
No, but I remember him talking about the hi-hat in the interview.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and Sheila Jordan played there in those days, and apparently he was famous for saying as she was leaving after doing, like, a great gig, and he had never heard her before, and he was kind of always, as we know, down on singers. As she's leaving, he said, so go back to New York and take some singing lessons. When you learn how to sing, give me a call. And unfortunately, she's such a dear heart. I guess she just fell to her knees laughing. She's like, from that moment on, I just adored him.
And he probably wasn't joking around, right?
I'm like, yeah, he's been saying that to me for years. But
yeah, see? Well, so anybody that likes what they're hearing here can obviously come and see Aaron February 14th, Valentine's Day, at the Green Mill, which will be starting at 9 o'clock. Of course, the Green Mill's at 4802 North Broadway Avenue. And, of course, more information at flappergirlsings.com. Why don't we hear one more tune from your upcoming release here? I've got all these notes out here. Outside the Soiree. See,
yes.
I knew it because we're looking at all these tunes and everything.
Mm-hmm.
We're jumping back and forth. So Outside the Soiree, hopefully coming out in 2014.
Hopefully,
yeah. And, of course, there'll be more information on chicagojazz.com as information warrants. But what tune are we going to hear?
Well, this last song is also the last song on the album, and it's only apropos that it would be titled The Parting Glass, although we don't have drinks in our hands, so we're going to need to fix that, Mike.
Well, that's you know, that's part of the problem, not being at Katarina's
right.
And being in a studio here. Mm-hmm. We definitely have a issue with that.
Right. Yeah.
So
I definitely
you come
take
out,
issue.
We'll get a full bar happening for
listeners.
You.
Start writing letters. now. The Parting Glass is actually a Celtic tune. It's a traditional Celtic tune that was performed a cappella normally at funerals. And if you listen to the lyrics, it's saying about all the people that you've met in your life and all the things that you've done right and wrong. But fill to me your parting glass. Good night and joy be with you all. And I just loved that
yeah,
way. It's almost like
cool.
You're all like doing a toast and this person has to leave the party early. I've been singing this song since I was about 12 years old. My very first voice teacher, Sue Mogan Madison in Columbus, Ohio, Delaware, Ohio, actually, truth be known, taught me this tune when I was like 10 or 11 years old. And she came out with an album at that time and she had it on her album. So all these years later, I thought I would take this song and make it into a jazz treatment. And we did it kind of like a three-bar phrasing of this Celtic traditional funeral song. And we made it into a pretty aggressively modern piece with the sentiment still there, I think, just on a different
yeah.
perspective. So every time I hear it and think about it, I think about Sue Mogan Madison. And as we were going in the studio to do this, I almost fell over when Tom Harrell said, "Oh, yeah, yeah. I've been really into Irish music the last couple of years. I know that song." And I said, "Okay, I know people from Ireland that spend their entire lives doing Irish music that don't know this song." And he said, "Yeah, I know, yeah. This is a great song." And the whole room just looked at both of us like we were nuts. But this was one of my favorite songs.
You'd be
songs.
The last person I would think that would even say that.
I mean, know.
You know, you'd think that he'd be so much into something else, but that's so cool.
He's
so
very much into Celtic music these days, and as is Larry Gray, who I work with all the time, mm-hmm. My bass player, and he's been playing with some of my good friends that are here in Chicago that are Celtic musicians for a few years now, and I love taking different genres and bringing them into the jazz idiom.
Yeah. Well, so. It's very cool. Thanks for coming in. And,
thank you.
Why don't we go out of our interview here with this tune. Of course, it's off of Outside the Soiree. And the name of this tune is The Parting Glass.
Good night and joy be with you all.
What a way to end it. All right. Live here on Chicago Jazz Revealed, WDCB 90.9 FM. And ChicagoJazz.com.